Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Leal welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert. Today is Friday, April 6, 2012. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Please visit our websites, llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more. And bringforth.org, that's bring, the number 4, th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I'll be asking Carla questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask Carla a question live on the air, call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294, or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Leal, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert of LL Research. Carla, how's your week been?
Well, it's been an interesting tiptoe through the tulips of adversity. I was having difficulty when I talked to you last week, and what do I get this week but shingles?
Oh, no.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, dear.
From one to the next. So we're hoping that next week they'll do something totally crazy like I'll get better.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Yeah, it sure will be. Unfortunately, I had to steer off Anna from Sweden, who very much wanted to work with me in some filming, and I can't possibly film because one of my eyes is shut.
Oh.
So that is, you can't make that a, you know, there's not enough makeup in the world to fix that. So
yeah,
had to let that go. But other than that, it's been a very interesting week for L&L. I think that Gary's been doing our admin and general oarsman, pulls a lot of oars here at L&L, has been working to massage the moderation of the forum, and we've done an awful lot of work with starting to bring a new forum person on board, and he's really optimistic about things. And the thing that I liked the best about what he said to me today, he said, you know, you started something a long time ago that had a lot of life in it, but, you know, it still has that life in it. It's not an object that has to stay the same. I can see it growing much far more than, you know, you could have predicted when you thought it up, because you didn't know the software, you didn't know it was possible. And I told him, yes, and isn't it wonderful to create something that lives and breathes and, you know, will live after you and have use for people and not just a statue of some kind. So doing
absolutely
really well this week. Thanks a lot for asking. How about you, girl?
Doing good. Everything's blooming, and we got all kinds of little baby fruits and veggies popping out, and we're just, you know, we're just having major springtime over here, so we're pretty excited. Doing a lot with the garden.
I was excited to hear, Monica, after the show last week, that my husband enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I asked him, maybe he would like to join us answering these discussion questions. Because after all, we're not answering anything in any final way. We're discussing them so that people that are working on them in the forums or that have written in privately can have our opinions to work with as well.
Well, we
so
would
I'd
love
like
to have you, Jim.
I'd like to introduce my husband, Jim McCarty.
Hello.
Hey.
Thanks a lot.
How are you doing, Jim? How have you been?
Oh, doing well. I'm very busy. We've got springtime blooming here, too, and I've been cutting some of the grass that it's producing. That's what I do for a living, so I've been very busy.
Can you send some of that down to Texas? We could use it in the compost pile.
I wish I could. I have a lot of extra.
Hey, and I just wanted to mention, you mentioned the new moderator at Bring Forth, and I just want to say Gary made a fantastic choice with Austin. He's just fantastic, one of my favorite people. I think he just couldn't have made a better choice, absolutely. So we wish Austin the best of luck in his new role. I told him, carry the torch. So
absolutely.
I'm going to start off with our opening riff for tonight, and this is from Session 5, Question 2. Questioner, we have decided to accept, if offered, the honor, duty of learning, teaching, the healing process. I would ask as to the first step which we should accomplish in becoming effective healers. I am Ra. We shall begin with the first of the three teachings, learnings. We begin with the mental learn teachings necessary for contact with the intelligent infinity. The prerequisite of mental work is the ability to retain silence of self at a steady state when required by the self. The mind must be opened like a door. The key is silence.
This week has been a week where I have had a lot of silence, and I have had a necessity for it because this particular affliction, shingles, gives you a headache, and you just lie there and seek for something to do besides be aware of yourself, and you get off on the marvelous resource of silence. It can never be said that a person is too sick to meditate. And the silence is gorgeous. I think that I see more and more people who are somehow infected by this need for noise. There has to be something happening. So the radio has to be on, the TV has to be on, CNN. Something needs to be going in the background. And in fact, actually, there are wonderful things to put in the background. There's all kinds of wonderful music. There's great radio. All the media have great things to offer. But silence is more powerful than any spoken entity we could ever imagine or create. Within silence are all the concepts that are too deep for words. And emotions too sublime for expression. In between the lines of our lives runs, if we will access this incredible resource, this gift of silence. And when you go into the silence for the purpose of seeking the Creator, that's a two-bagger, you know, wham, you hit it to first base by just getting quiet. I mean, stopping talking is a huge challenge for people because they're used to some kind of input, and if they don't get the input, then they feel like maybe they should be talking. But just to be in the silence is to be in a whole other world completely. And then when you move into the silence, when you make the decision to move into the silence, you know you're opening a door and going through it. And you know the key is silence. You cannot meditate and do something else. You cannot write in your journal and do something else. Your life of the spirit takes place not within words. It crawls up into words because we have a vast need for expression. But it begins in the precincts of silence. And I wish all of you great joy at enjoying that wonderful and free aspect of your life. Turn off the TV. Turn off the machine, whatever it is that you're looking at. And curl up and just listen to the silence for a minute. Now, Ra goes on and on about healing and about learning to be better teachers, about learning to channel, about doing inner work. Talks a lot about the silence beyond that simple opening of the door. But they all begin with the same door opening. And I just think this is a remarkable quote because it is terse. The key is silence, four words. And they're so easy to turn into action. When you're looking for silence, now I will say that sometimes when you're looking for silence, it seems like everybody in your immediate family has got to speak with you now, you know. And if you're a teacher, everybody's got to consult. And if you're a doctor, everybody's got an appointment, and you know, all this. But generally, within the precincts of a day, you can hack out some silence. And I encourage you to do it and go in to that silence with a mind to seek. I wish you all good luck.
Okay, that triggered a couple of questions that I'm thinking people might be thinking. And I'm going to skip the obvious question and go to the other question, and then I'll go back to the obvious question. You mentioned concepts that are in the silence. Do you think on some level there is actually information being downloaded to our mind somehow when we're meditating?
Well, if we're apt, if we can pick it up, yes, that's what channeling is all about.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so even though people might think there's nothing happening, I know in my own experience many times I've had a problem, you know, something on my mind, and I meditate, and then a little while later, all of a sudden, the solution just appears in my mind, and it didn't seem like it was a direct result of the meditation, but I feel that it was. I felt that it helped me to clear my mind long enough to get the answer.
Yes.
So would you say there's maybe some higher knowledge? You know, we think we can figure everything out intellectually, but maybe by turning off the intellectual chatter, we can actually open ourselves to some higher knowledge that may come.
I definitely do. That is at the core of the biggest out of service of my life, of course, which is channeling. If I thought that the best I could do was my own opinion.
Uh-oh. Okay, we lost Carla, but it sounds like she's coming right back.
We had an incident with a cat. Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes.
Wires went everywhere. Okay. Question again?
Well, you had already been answering the question, so I think you answered that. So
okay.
I'm not sure if you finished your thoughts, but okay.
I'm pretty sure I did not, but I don't know where it went.
Sometimes I'll be on the phone and the cat will just walk across the keyboard or walk across the phone.
Yeah, well, 12 pounds of black fur could be a startlement, I'll tell you.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, the other question is, okay, moving into the silence, getting into that silence, I know a lot of people have said, yeah, but how do you do that? My mind won't quit chattering. The thoughts keep you know, rushing through my head.
That,
how do I make this
question
stop?
Because there's a big difference between going into the silence and then willingly picking up the thoughts in the silence and carrying them, and going into the silence and then seeing that there's a thought arising and going, oh, look, thought arising, and then going back into the silence, you know, so that you don't disturb yourself. If you don't mind the things that are arising and falling in your mind, then you can stay in the silence. And that's the way I've had to do it, because I do not have a natural gift for silence. I have a natural gift for worship, I guess you'd say, but it doesn't necessarily include a gift for clearing my mind. And yet, at the same time, I've been able to do that just by meditating poorly. So I encourage everybody who feels they must be fairly poor at clearing their minds to just keep on doing it. And if you catch yourself doing it, then say, oh, look, thoughts are rising. I'm looking at the thought. Now I'm putting it down, you know, letting it go. And just by practice, after so many years, that is going to end up being a satisfactory thing, although never a perfect one.
Well, that's reassuring because, you know, to know that it's not mandatory that we have perfect total silence in order to benefit.
Jim, do you have any thoughts along those lines?
Well, I think the intentions are probably the most important thing that we have to offer. If we intend and attempt to reach the silence, then we're on the right track and we'll be doing the best that we can do.
Okay, wonderful. I remember there's some Chinese saying, I don't remember the exact quote, but it's something along the lines of allow the thoughts to float by like clouds. Just observe the thoughts, but, you know, not get swept away by them. And
yes, and Willie Nelson said one time when somebody asked him, where did he get all those beautiful melodies? And he said, well, they're out there. I just listen and start playing with one that I hear and put it into a song. And my poetry is the same way. I'm excited, by the way. I didn't tell you. The poetry, I had not realized that Ian was going to do this, but he's producing it as an e-book, I mean, where you can actually print it out. And so the poetry of Carla Elizabeth Ruckert is on its way to being produced.
Oh, we can't wait.
I
wonderful.
Know. We can't wait.
Well, let
we
us
being
know.
The editorial me. Yeah.
Absolutely. Let us know when that's ready. Okay, well, we have a few questions tonight. The first one's from Gemini Wolf from the Bring Forth Forum. And if you just tuned into the show, you can check out our website at Bring Forth. That's bring4th.org. And our other website is llresearch.org. So, and you can call in live, of course, at 646-595-2294. 646-595-2294. Be sure to hit the one key. Okay, Gemini Wolf says, is 3D about simply choosing the STO or STS path or about building polarity once we do make a choice? I've heard it said that rather than trying to accumulate polarity, we should just be in the moment.
Okay. Well, it's always important to be in the moment. The way that we stay in the moment, on that lies, you know, the rest of our spiritual work. The more we can stay in the now, focus on what's actually happening, the better. But life is a swiftly moving stream, and it goes on. And, you know, sometimes we have very imperfect ability to be aware of what's in the moment. At any rate, that ability to let go and be in the moment is always very important to spiritual work, not necessarily to the work of spiritualization of the mind, body, or spirit that is called for by the cosmology of the raw material and the confederation material in general, where the design of our lives in third density is to choose a polarity, and not only to choose it, but to continue choosing it, and every time that you choose it, you sharpen your ability to see situations like that, and you sharpen your ability to take the high road, do the right thing, follow, you know, spirit's coaxings. So it's definitely important. The first one is important. But the key is that you want to build polarity on an unending basis. You don't want to take anything for granted. It's easy to take for granted, for instance, that you know everything there is to know about something you've studied in college for a semester, so you take a test and you know it. You're basically regurgitating to the professor what it is that the professor has asked you to learn. And then you tell the professor what it is that you learned. The professor's happy, you're happy, everybody goes along. then you forget it to some extent. Well, this happens with us every day. Life comes along, and, you know, we're good. Oh, we are good. We haven't said a thing to a soul. We are so positive in polarity. We are just brimming with love and thanksgiving, and then we realize it's time to get up. The rest of the day is spent attempting to achieve that pre-dawn state of peace that you had when your heart was right, you knew where you were going, and you were completely at rest, because you start getting catalyst. You know, by evening, you're not what you were in the morning. What do you think about that, Mick?
Well, that's very true. The catalyst sets in, and you have your challenges to face, and to bring that equanimity of the morning peace to the challenges is really the work of the day, the work of the mind-body-spirit complex.
I think that the simple truth is that choosing doesn't last. It simply won't last. You can't. It's like something that's in the refrigerator. You can make a beautiful choice, but it doesn't stay. It's temporary. Everything is temporary. So you make a choice in your mind, and you're full of compassion, and you're really well tuned to love and to serve and to seek the Creator. And then, I mean, it can be as simple as road rage. It can be as simple as somebody pulling out in front of you or cutting in front of you. And, you know, that happens so often. That happens every time I'm in a car. Whether I'm driving or not, it happens. People are just in such a hurry. And that is catalyst, and that does move you from where you were. And nobody's going to move you back there but yourself. So it's really a good idea, after you've made that first great decision, to continue with your sense of drama and with your sense of personal knighthood, shall we say, and, you know, step up to the plate every single day in a fine and gentlemanly manner, or a ladylike manner, and be civil with life, be compassionate with life, see if you can find a high road to take in every situation. There are usually higher roads to take, if not an absolutely satisfactory choice. And do that every day of your life. Don't ever assume that you're good to go. You're good to go. You know, it's like when something comes out of the cleaner. And, well, it's beautiful, but, you know, the dust of the day gets on it. It's not a slam in anybody's personality to say you have a tendency to lose polarity as the day goes on, because you're just so tired by the end of the day. Jim, do you have something to say to that? Really, your physical work really puts that you in that situation.
Well, I think the thing you learn by continuing on through the tiredness of the day is that you can do more than you think you can do, and you have resources upon which you can call that maybe you're not aware of usually. But if you call upon those resources, they're there, and there is support, inner support, from other portions of yourself, and probably from guides and angelic sources as well.
At the end of the day, so to speak, is there any advantage to ending with more than the 51%?
Yeah, I think that the higher that your number is, the more your vibrations will resemble those of the Creator, and the more interesting and true and real and authentic will be the world in front of your eyes.
Okay, the next question is actually related to this, and it's from Jim Kent. Dear Carla and Monica, I have a question regarding motivation and polarization. For those of us aware of the Law of One, I would like to hear your thoughts regarding making the choice once aware of what that choice involves. Do you think that it is ever the case that in knowing that if you achieve the 51% grade for STO, you graduate, then what becomes your sole motivation for making the 51% grade? Is there a danger that in pursuing the 51% ESTO grade purely to graduate, this actually becomes a selfish act to benefit the self? And wanting to graduate and true altruistic service to others without any concern for the self. Is there a difference and does it matter? Thank you both for all your service.
Well, thank you, Jim Kent, for your letter. And I want to say hello. How are you? To introduce the radio audience, Jim Kent is an old-time long lover of the meditations of the raw material, and I met him in England in 2005 when I was having a teaching tour over there. He had at that time come out with a song about the beginning of fourth density, and he had used a part of one of my channelings for LNL research about, you know, the baby is alive, the baby of fourth density is struggling, certainly, but it is alive. And it was, I thought, a very effective song. At any rate, Jim is the perpetrator of such crimes. Let's see. I sincerely doubt that anybody, knowing that if you choose the 51% grade for STO, you graduate, then becomes that becomes your sole motivation for making the 51% grade. I doubt it. I mean, wouldn't occur to me. But on the other hand, who am I? Anything could happen. Is there a danger that in pursuing 51% service to others purely to graduate, this is, becomes a selfish act? It does, yes. If you're just trying to become 51% so that you can get out of this place, then that's a service to self act. Motivation, as Jim said, is everything. And is there a difference between wanting to graduate and true altruistic service to others? Yes, of course there is. It matters because your polarity score is not really a numerical score. The Rob Group was giving a simplistic answer to a question that almost demanded it when he said, you know, percentages. It's not a question of quantity. You don't have a certain amount of goodness that you, you know, put in by the tablespoonful and measure and, you know, flatten with a spoon. It's a quantity. It's a quantity of love and compassion that polarity is built of. So I think it matters greatly as to your intention, the motivation behind wanting to graduate in true altruistic service to others. Of course you want to graduate. Thinking about death, there is a choice to make. And although it's not the choice between life and death that the Christian religion and so many others put out there for you to choose from, the options are still to stay here or to be left behind and to go on to fourth density. You know, and you generally want to pass with your class. So I think that's in the background there, and a little of that is normal. You have to have an ego shell in order to survive. But the person that's really, truly involved in being of service to other people isn't thinking about being of service to other people. He's thinking about the next thing to do. He's thinking about, you know, trying to carry everything on his shoulders until he can put it down for the night and go to sleep. And out of that is going to come his service, you know. But you don't just sit around thinking, now this is my service, you know. I'm sure it's very true that Jim has a huge amount of service involved in working with the nature spirits here in Anchorage. It's been noticeable that the yards he's worked on for a number of years now, people have begun to say that's an especially beautiful yard, and things just grow better for him. But, you know, when he comes to work, he's not thinking, okay, I have to do this really spiritually. he just feels his vibrations are spiritual, and the earth enjoys them, and he enjoys working with the nature spirits. Jim, you got any thoughts before we go back to Monica?
My thought here would be that I think one of the stumbling blocks is to overthink a situation and to wonder exactly what we should do in every situation. And I think whether it's our intuition, our subconscious, our heart, or whatever, there is a knowing inside of us that will direct us, because we've already made the choice of being of service to others. And if we just let it come out and observe it and respond, that it's a natural dance. We don't have to wonder about the situation and weigh the pros and the cons. Well, I'll do this because this seems better. I think the answers are there, and they're within us. And we respond to every situation with that intuitional guidance.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. Hey, you guys make a good team. And quick announcement, if anyone would like to call in live, we love having live listeners, callers rather. You can call 646-595-2294. Press the 1 key. That's 646-595-2294. And the next question is from Valtor. Are there any circumstances where a group of positive ETs would make their presence known to the mainstream? A circumstance like the end of 3D maybe?
Well, in the 16th session of Ra, the questioner asks, if the Orion group was able to land, would this increase their polarization? What I'm trying to get at is it better for them to work behind the scenes to get recruits, shall we say, from our planet, the person from our planet going strictly on his own using free will, or is it just as good for the Orion group to land on our planet and demonstrate remarkable powers? And Ra says, this first instance is, in the long run, shall we put it, more salubrious for the Orion group in that it does not infringe upon the Law of One by landing. So the basic problem with landing is infringement. And I was looking this afternoon to find out where Ra specifically talked about that infringement and saying that, you know, that was the first requirement, that if there had been, you know, like a referendum and people voted and you know, 3 out of 5 or more said, yeah, we want this ET group among us. They seem like good chaps. They could come, but they don't have a referendum among us, and they can't come.
Well, you hear a lot of channels all over the all over the place saying that they're going to land anytime, and the dates
sure
keep,
do.
But keep
the
coming
answer
and going.
Right there, you know, a positive, polarized group would not land unless there were a public referendum.
Aha.
So you, by deduction, the clever fellow can figure that it's very possible that these people that are saying they're going to land are con men of the fifth density negative.
Mm-hmm. And that quote that you referenced was specifically talking about the Orion group, which is,
yes,
largely
a little more familiar
negative
with this area than I am. Jim, what do you have to say about that?
Well, Don once asked Ra if it was true that Jesus was going to come again at the end of the age and welcome those who were graduating into the fourth density. And Ra suggested that there would be those of like vibration that would do that. So there may be something of that nature in store at some point in the future. Due to the planetary harvest. Other than that, I don't think there's anything really said about landing, because it's viewed as an infringement on free will as long as we're in the third density and attempting to make our choices.
And yet there's definitely been an increase in UFO sightings. I mean, you're hearing about it on the mainstream news. Even the mainstream media like Fox News is covering UFO sightings. I mean, what do you make of that? I mean, does that qualify as enough people becoming aware?
There's a certain amount of UFO activity, I think, that is intended to get people to wonder about the concept of infinity and about other types of life being in the universe with us and what this means to us. But it's of such a nature that it's mysterious enough and unprovable enough that people who don't want to think about it, don't want to believe it, can easily do that, can ignore it. But people who are open to such concepts can then take these mysterious sightings and think about them, begin to wonder about the origin of such entities, about their purpose here, about how we're related to them, about what it means to our basic life questions of who are we and where are we going, what is life. So I think there's still enough mystery left in these sightings that they don't infringe upon free will. They do spark interest in those who are open to such.
So just talking about landings that aren't real, that are thought form landings. That is, it's not that they're not real, but they don't occur in the physical. But
mm-hmm.
that it occurs in the person's mind.
So you're saying it's both, or you're saying most of these are thought forms, or?
I think the ones that are positive are thought forms.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And I think the ones that are involved in abductions and stuff, and you know, are doing actually doing that are service to self-oriented.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of speculation, I know, amongst New Age circles. You know, people are saying, oh, all these increased sightings, that's kind of an indication that they're going to land and all this and that. And even amongst Law of One students, some are speculating that maybe it's because the veil is thinning. Do you think that has anything to do with it?
Nikki, you want to take that one?
Actually, I have no idea about the veil thinning, and whether that might affect...
Well, no, I don't think that has much to do with the phenomenon. I think that what the phenomenon has to do with, basically, is that it's very close to the end. As a matter of fact, might as well be the end of third density. You're getting your last year of light out of a 2,500-year cycle, right? I don't know what percentage that is, but it's 125,000, something like that. Anyway, it's a teeny, weeny, weeny one, small, very small. And you're trying to use your third density wits, which are growing increasingly feeble, to solve the problems of your imbalances, which are becoming unbearably clear to you. You know, so, I mean, you're in a tough position in 2012. But fortunately, I think most people have made their choice. I really do. And they are embarked upon that fourth density, rise towards positive polarity.
And for the benefit of those who may have missed some of the earlier shows in which you explained in quite a lot of detail about what you just meant by nearing the end of 3D light, you're not saying nearing the end of the world or something like that.
No, I'm not at all. I'm saying that in every density, the chief characteristic of the density is the light, the way the light is, the essence of the light. And it actually changes from density to density, not in such a way that it cannot be included. Just the way if you took a bunch of atoms from over here and a bunch of atoms from over there and said, live in the same football field, they'd go, well, all right. It's plenty of room. And even in an atom, I didn't realize this until Don wrote in his book in 76 that if you want to have a really good idea of what an atom is like, you go and you put a football in the middle of a football field, and then you go up in the cheap seats, and I'm talking about the big house. And way up there you put a pea. Now that pea is the first electron to your atom, the football. That's how much space there is before the first particle. And so there's plenty of room in the universe for inner nesting. Everything fits within everything else. So it's a matter of the third density light going down on third density planet that's done, you know, that's matured, it's done its job. But it will remain as part of the foundation of fourth density, just like our second and first densities remain for us to enjoy our rocks and our trees and animals.
Now, you mentioned a lot of these UFO sightings, the positive ones may actually be thought forms, and a lot of the more physical ones may be negative. And yet we know the quarantine is ending. So could it be that as the quarantine is lifted, that we could just simply see the beings that have been around us all this time?
Wouldn't that be lovely? I think that would be lovely. I don't believe they feel we could take it. Jim, what's your feeling on that?
For as long as third density is in effect and we're attempting to make choices, I don't think we're going to see too much that we haven't seen before, because that would be a way of influencing our choice.
So even though the 3D light is waning, it is 2012. I know you've spoken, because Ra mentioned this transit, and I know Quo's mentioned that as well, the transition period. So does that mean people can still make the choice, like a few generations from now?
I think people can make the choice any time. But if they made the choice, it would be from another planet. Because the next time they die and they walk the steps of light after their death, their natural physical death, then they will find that they don't belong in fourth density, so they can't go with the beings of Earth that go to fourth. They'll have to go to another third density planet.
But if we have a transition going on in the next, and I hope you don't mind all these detailed questions, it keeps triggering more questions that I'm thinking people might be thinking as they're hearing this. Over the next few hundred years, potentially up to 700 years of transition time, what will people be doing during that time? I mean,
isn't that fascinating to think about? I really wonder. I mean, the readings recently, and I can't say too recently, I haven't been able to channel since last April, almost a year. This operation on my lumbar spine has kind of lost me some uptime. But at any rate, what was the question again?
If 3D light is waning, and we have a transition of potentially up to 700 years from now, then what will people be doing? Can they still be making the choice during that period?
Well, I think that the people that will be here now will not be people that have not made the choice. I think the people that will be here will be fourth density wanderers coming back in third density bodies to alleviate what they feel to themselves is karma from being involved in the destruction of Atlantis or their planet, Mars, or their planet
Maldek.
It just depends on how deeply that is scarred and how deeply true that the guilt lies as to whether people want to do that. But I've heard so many people wanting to serve Gaia, the planet itself, that I sort of have a feeling that the latter days will be idealistic and very green, you know, very much oriented to Mother Nature.
Okay. Well, I'm going to move on to the next question from Shinar. Dear Carla, I hope you have found some relief from your pain and suffering recently. You are in our thoughts. Considering the natural design of the evolution of consciousness, what are your thoughts regarding the individual human's ability to fully comprehend the teachings revealed in the Law of One? In other words, given that there are humans at many varying stages of consciousness and evolution, is anyone who simply reads the raw material able to become suddenly fully evolved? Or do you see some distinguishing factors that would require a more evolved consciousness, having had more actual life experience, to be able to fully comprehend the truths revealed in such complex and dynamic teachings? There seem to be many students of the ancient teachings that can repeat what they read, but are not really mature enough in evolved consciousness to understand what the information actually means to their existence. For instance, there are many monks, having been born into Buddhist traditions, that are fully capable of reciting their scriptures to the letter, and who would meditate deeply and live a very dedicated lifestyle, and yet, due to the particular degree of the level of evolved consciousness, they are not as adept at understanding their faith as more evolved consciousnesses may be. Is there something to be said for social establishment that acknowledges this and devises stages of learning and development? And is there any danger to being given too much knowledge before one is evolved enough to grasp it?
Okay, well, I'll try to do your question justice, Shinar, and thank you very much. The vibrations working with you are so friendly and outgoing. I really appreciate your energy. Let's see, is anyone who simply reads the raw material able to become suddenly fully evolved? If I meet anybody who does it, I will let you know. realization is a difficult thing to measure, even subjectively, but subjectively is the only way it's ever going to be measured. Ra, session 16, question 37, I noodled on this afternoon for a while. Ross, questioner, Don, I'm assuming that it is not necessary for an individual to understand the law of one to go from third to fourth density. Is this correct? And Ross says, it is absolutely correct that an entity consciously realizes that it not understand in order for it to be harvestable. Understanding is not of this density. So that pretty well knocks that question on its heels. No, I don't think that there is a stairway to heaven, as was it the Who so brilliantly wrote that?
Led Zeppelin, actually.
Led Zeppelin. Thank you very much. I'm sorry, Led. The natural design of the evolution of consciousness seems to be that of a kind of spiritual Athanor, where we're basically cooked and the essence taken, and then that progressively cooked and the essence taken and on and on. So I see no hope that we can go to the well one time and have no more need of further assistance. I think we're going to be needing spiritual assistance always in this density, because it's the third density. We see nothing in this life as it truly is. You know, the things that seem realest to us are in the world of Maya, the world of 10,000 things, the world of katydids and summer nights and things that don't last. So we are not a citizen of eternity in our conscious being. And we cannot become fully evolved by a single reading. Definitely not. You talk about the monks have memorized these incredibly long poems of the, you know, prayers of their people. Just incredibly long, goes on for hour after hour after day. And no, I don't think that necessarily gives you realization. It gives you something. It's an incredible feat to have done all that memorization, so you have the pride of knowing that you've done a good job. I would more likely go to the keys of unknowing again and say what you need to do is just get on with it. Don't worry about understanding. Don't worry about know what you know. Ask yourself how you feel. And ask yourself, what can I do? In session 84, the questioner says to Ra, I'm sure that we are getting into a problem area with the first distortion here, with the difficulty, with a bit of transient material. But I have questions from a couple of people that I would like to ask. The first one especially is of no lasting value. Andre Puharich asks about the coming physical changes, specifically this summer. I'm having trouble turning my page. There we go. Is there anything that we could relay to him about that? And Ross says, we may confirm the good intention of the source of this entity's puzzles and suggest that it is a grand choice that each of us may make to, by desire, collect the details of the day, or, by desire, seek the keys to unknowing. Truly, truly my favorite little phrase, the keys to unknowing. Don asks, I can't help but be interested in the fact that this other entity to whom we were previously referring reported being taken on board a crab. Could you tell me something about that? Well, the nature of the contact is such that in order for the deep portion of the trunk of the tree of mind affected to be able to accept the contact, some symbology which may rise to the conscious mind is necessary as a framework for the explanation of the fruits of the contact. In such cases, the entity's own expectations fashion the tale which shall be most acceptable to that entity, and in the dream state or trance state in which visions may be produced, this seeming memory is fed into the higher levels of the so-called subconscious and the lower levels of the conscious. From this point, the story may surface as any memory and cause the instrument to function without losing balance or sanity. So, is there something to be said for social establishments that acknowledge and devise stages of learning? Well, yes. There is a good place for all of the ways that humans have yet devised to delve into the infinite mysteries of the one creator. However, there is no use thinking when you set out with your pick that you are going to know, because you will always be faced with the mystery and the paradox of divine creatorhood. Jim, do you think there's any danger to being given too much knowledge before one is evolved enough to grasp it?
Well, again, I would go back to a comment I made earlier about not thinking too much about things, but following the inner guidance. And so in that regard, I would suggest that knowledge is helpful in a certain way to give you a bias to set you to thinking about certain things. But again, as Ross said, understanding is not of this density. So if we think we know a whole lot, that may get in our way. I think it's more important to want or to desire or to intend to be of service and to grow in the love of the Creator.
I think I'd like to maybe flesh out Shinar's question just a little bit, because I've had a couple of private conversations with him on this very topic, and this exact question had come up before with another member of the Bring Forth community, and it's a little bit paradoxical because we're actually referring to quotes from Ra about this very thing, and the raw material itself is some pretty heavy-duty knowledge, information. And I think what Shinar was kind of wondering was, I believe, and I don't think he would mind me sharing this, he came, because he's shared this publicly, he came from a background of one of the more esoteric traditions. I don't know which one. I think Gnosticism or something, if I'm not mistaken. And he was seeing a lot of knowledge that in his tradition was something that was reserved for, you know, you kind of had to work up to it, and it was considered advanced knowledge, and he's seeing it, you know, being spoken about right there publicly, and just lots of different people talking about this. Of course, you can access any knowledge on the internet nowadays.
Right.
And the information itself is you know, Ra did provide a lot of really deep information, you know, about sexuality, about just opening up the energy centers and all kinds of stuff. So on the one hand, you know, what I'm hearing you say is, you know, don't worry about the knowledge too much. And yet, on the other hand, what do we do with this? This body, we've been given this body of knowledge, and it's even been asked, the question's been asked on the forum, why did Ra give us all this knowledge if we're not supposed to really try to figure it out intellectually?
Oh, I think we're supposed to try to figure it out intellectually. I'm certain of that. He starts the book off, or they start the book off, by saying this is sent to you because you have a need for... Jim, how does that go?
A more intensive study, or as you would call it, advanced study of the evolution of your mind, your body, and your spirit.
So as long as we want to know about it, they're going to try to help us if, you know, they can. Don had a saying, you got to do something to fill up the time between now and when you die. And I think that there are few sects in the world that take such a radical view of religion, that they see only the most purely religious as being truly religious. And the rest of us clods that work in the middle of society as laggards. But I say that we're in the front running. I say that those of us who are in the laity of the world, who are creating and having our own spiritual programs, or who, you know, run our own spiritual houses, by however you want to say that, we are the ones who are closest to the present moment, closest to the now, and enjoying ourselves the most, I hope.
I think the conversations that we have about the knowledge and about the information we get from either Ra or any other source of information is a way of relating to each other in a way that inspires our continued seeking and our continued serving. But at the end of it all, at the end of the day, shall we say, as I always said, the important thing is that we love, and we love each other, and we love the creation, we love the Creator. And so what we can always depend on is love. The knowledge is something that helps us to relate to each other and to spark information and inspiration, but always remember that the foundation of it all is loving.
Wonderful. We are actually out of time, so if you guys have any last comment about anything?
I just wish everybody a wonderful Easter and have a delicious experience of spring.
Okay, wonderful. And Jim, it was really nice having you on the show. I hope you join us more often.
Well, thank you so much. I did enjoy it, and I probably will.
Yeah, boy, I feel really honored having both of you. Wow. It's pretty cool. You really do make a good team. Okay, thank you so much. You've been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our two websites, llresearch.org, which is LL Research's archive website, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, The Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more, and bringforth.org, LL Research's community website featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. And you can go to bringforth.org and go to the miscellaneous section and go to the thread Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert, submitting questions, and ask your questions there. Have a wonderful week. We will be here next Friday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. See you then.